Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Can everyone hear me okay? And thanks, Stefan. I'm really glad to be here with Brian tonight because I think that one of the themes for to be honest about what the fight ahead really looks like, it has to do with understanding why OCAP has been allowed to be isolated. And Brian is one of the very few people in academia, actually, who has spoken out for OCAP, written articles, and been a public intellectual. And it just points out, I think, one of the many sectors that has been silent. Academia has been silent. So has the civil rights, the civil liberties community, within the legal community. So has most of the media that I'm a part of. Well, they haven't been silent, but we'll come to that later. And we have to think about how to change that. So we have to name it, but not get demobilized by it. I think that maybe we have another strength that Brian didn't mention. I hope that politics goes in waves. That's what I can take from the liberal victory. That maybe people get tired of being assholes after a while. It gets boring. And that's what I'm hoping. Maybe we're on the cusp of this new trend of not being an asshole. I'm hoping. Because I think, you know, we can really make that work. It's a great honor to be here breathing Tory-free air with you, with OCAP, the greatest Tory haters of them all. And while we are in this little breathing space, this little air pocket, before the liberals actually come in and start screwing up, we should enjoy it, right? We should breathe deeply of that Tory defeat. But there is a bitter aftertaste. And for me, it really is personified and typified in this trial. Because the Tories are gone. They were beaten at the polls. But, you know, I have to say it hurts that they are not going to pay a personal price. Please, I'm not inciting to riot. But it does hurt that they are not going to pay a personal price for the policies that hurt so many people. Quite the opposite, in fact. These half-wits are actually going to go collect their kickbacks now. We know that, right? They're going to get paid back for the tax breaks, for the union busting, for the rent deregulation. They're going to get the positions on the corporate boards that they've been promised, and the positions at Bay Street law firms that they had before they went into office. It's payback time. And their pensions. And at the same time as this is happening, John Clark, who has devoted his life to fighting the people who were being evicted, sickened, brutalized, jailed, deported, and killed by these policies, is going to court. And if we don't help him, to jail. So the Tories may be out, but the Tory legacy lives on like a ticking time bomb. It lives on in their policies, and it lives on in this vindictive, trumped up trial. We haven't beaten the Tories until we beat this trial. This is the job. We're on a roll. But before this can happen, I fear that we need to dig a little deeper and understand the human way in which the Tory legacy lives on. It lives on in the mindset that allows people to look the other way and tell themselves that what's happening to John Clark, that what happens to OCAP, that what happens to homeless people doesn't concern them, and that they shouldn't get involved. This is how OCAP got isolated. This is why we have to understand not just speech, but also silence. This is the true Tory legacy, and you can't beat it at the polls. I wish you could. It's the divide and conquer mindset that they wove into the fabric of our province and into ourselves as people. You know, probably the people in this room are not the people who fell victim to it as much, but it's in everybody. This is the Great Tory strategy. It's 905 versus 416. It's workers versus the unemployed. It's rural versus urban. It's white versus everybody else. It's activists versus regular people. Now, the Tories didn't invent any of these divisions, but boy, were they good at working them. Boy, were they good at deepening them. And it's what allowed, at its core, for them to get away with their brutal policies. Don't worry about the poor, they're lazy, they're drunk. Don't worry about OCAP, they're criminals, and they're not even homeless. Look away, look out for number one, keep your head down, keep walking, keep driving. This is a collective blindness that we suffer from. This unwillingness to look each other in the eye, that's the Tory legacy. I wish you could vote it out. But it's what this trial is really about. This is the question that we face, that everybody in this room knows looking around, we need to talk to way more people about this. And the question is, are we going to keep looking the other way? Or are we going to open our eyes and are we going to see what really is going on in this province? I talked to John Clark on June 14th. And it was an interesting time because the Walkerton crisis was just breaking in the press. And suddenly there was all this soul searching going on in the press. It was like a revelation. People were going, oh my God, Tory policies actually hurt people. It was quite startling. Bad government policy. Could it be that bad government policy actually takes a human toll? Now, in the 7 previous months to the Walkerton crisis, 22 people had died on the streets of this city. But very few people were making these connections between the deaths in Walkerton and the deaths on the streets of Toronto. Certainly nobody in the media. And I asked John about that. I actually asked him if it bothered him. And he said no. He didn't say, I told you so. He didn't say it pissed him off, the hypocrisy of it all. What he did was he expressed solidarity with the people in Walkerton. And he said that the policies that people thought were only going to affect the most marginal people, the discarded people, the people that it was easy to look away from, were actually reaching into the lower middle class. The policies that were supposed to only be affecting urban people were starting to affect rural people. And what John said was that what was becoming clear is that given enough time, the Tory policies were actually a war not just on the poor, but basically on everyone except for a select few at the top. That is solidarity. But that solidarity was not returned. Obviously with some noteworthy exceptions, like the OCAP allies and rank and file members of the unions, that solidarity was not returned to OCAP. When OCAP was attacked by police, by the press, by the courts, far too many people looked away and continued to look away. And we allowed ourselves to be divided. And far too many people covered their asses, actually, distanced themselves, and left OCAP hanging. This was the Tory mindset in action. Look out for number one. And that's what left OCAP vulnerable. And this is the great shame, I believe, of the Ontario left. Now, I know it sounds like blame, but I think that understanding this really does help equip us to understand what we need to do to fight this trial and to win more victories. We have to understand how the system chooses who to target. Because OCAP was attacked for a very simple reason, and I think the fact that these guys were arrested a month after the actual event made it clear that the police were watching the signs to see what they could get away with. And they went after OCAP because they thought that they could get away with it, plain and simple. And that's the way the police always work. They go to the places where the broader mainstream society has sent clear signals that they are not particularly interested in what happens there, whether it's housing projects or First Nations communities. And the same thing happened to OCAP. They read the signs. And they decided that they could get away with violating their own laws, with trumped-up charges, with grossly violating people's rights, and that no one would make a fuss. They banked on the Tory mindset kicking in. Now, the good news is that we have another chance. It's bad news for John. It's good news for the left. We have another chance. We have another chance to get it right, to truly rid ourselves of the Tories, not just at the polls, but in our heads, in our hearts, in our actions. Because this province needs a collective exorcism of the Tory mindset. And the best way to do that, as you all know, is to go out to John's trial. It means being here tonight. It means giving more money. It means buying more t-shirts. It means talking to people and convincing them that they should do the same thing. It means speaking out, but not in a wishy-washy, I don't like their tactics, you know, we have our differences, but it means speaking out loudly, proudly, unambiguously. It means proving them wrong, because this has all been a calculation. The Tories thought that no one would make a fuss, so it's time to make a fuss. They thought that people would look away. It's time to stare them right in the face and shine a huge spotlight on what they're doing. It's time to really get rid of the Tory mindset so that we can look each other in the eye again. One thing that is quite sad to say is that I'm often struck that people outside of Canada recognize the importance, the significance of what OCAP is doing more than people inside Canada. In my work as a writer and as a filmmaker, I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel and see many of the most powerful social movements that are serious about fighting capitalism. And they all know about OCAP. And there are really clear similarities between OCAP's tactics and the tactics of the social movements that I'm talking about around the world. I was in South Africa last summer at this demonstration that was outside the World Summit on Sustainable Development. It was a huge anti-privatization demonstration. It was about the privatization of water and electricity. And there was somebody holding a sign, and the sign said, "Don't ask, take," which I thought was a very simple and eloquent summary of a spirit of resistance that is global and that OCAP is a part of. It's a kind of a new impatience, an impatience with asking for rights that are already ours, that are already guaranteed in our own laws, in multiple UN charters, that have already been affirmed in huge reports on housing and poverty and promises and task forces and white papers and everything. It's about saying, we have these rights, we have to take them. And you can see that around the world. In South Africa, there's a group that has strong ties with OCAP called the Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee. And their constitution says that water and electricity is a right. So when the privatized water and electricity companies come along and cut them off, they have what they call struggle electricians and struggle plumbers who reconnect people's water and reconnect people's electricity, or dig up the water meters. And in Brazil, the Landless People's Movement, the slogan is Occupy, Resist, and Produce. The Brazilians have been promised land reform by every government they've ever had, and they never get it. And so they've just started cutting down the fences around unused farmland and planting food and moving in. In Argentina, where I've been living for the past year, the unemployed have formed huge unions. It's like OCAP times a million. And they're called picateros. They're called picateros because their tactic is to have a kind of reverse picket line, because they've already lost their jobs at their workplaces, so they can't have a picket outside their workplaces. So what they do is they block roads and bridges and railways to stop the flow of trade. And they force the government to come and negotiate with them to have a social safety net that's been taken away. But more and more, they've also been asking for land, and they've also been asking for abandoned factories to put them back to work. I was in South Africa, and I met an activist from Cape Town who had been involved in very fierce anti-eviction struggles, very hands-on anti-eviction struggles, where the state had come in and they had fought them off and they protected their homes. And I told her I was from Toronto, and she said, "Really? Tell me about the Pope Squat." Which I thought was an amazing moment. And that's why there are solidarity protests around the world for OCAP, because OCAP is part of this international impatience. So before I end, I just want to talk a little bit more about what's at stake here. I talked to Stefan, I guess it was about almost 2 years ago, while he was still living under the bail conditions that forbade him from speaking to anyone in OCAP or obviously going to the OCAP offices. And what Stefan said was, "I have been fired by legal means from my job." And that's exactly what's happened. The criminal justice system, as Brian has said, has launched an overt campaign to fire not only Stefan and Gaetan and PJ and John, but OCAP, to fire OCAP, to erase OCAP. That's the strategy of singling them out. And there's a great irony in this, of course, this idea of picking out the leaders in OCAP, because OCAP, unlike so many groups in this country and around the world, has an active strategy of trying to disperse power and not have a cult of personality. So poor John is cringing in the corner because we've seen John's on so many occasions being invited. We once spoke in Port Elgin to the CAW. John was invited to speak, and he said, "Hi, I'm here. Here's Sue Cullis. She's going to speak to you instead," and sat down. That doesn't happen a lot. Or I called OCAP one day. I said, "Can I please speak to John Clark?" And Sarah Vance was put on the phone. Okay. They said, "John's been talking to the media too much lately." So there is an irony of obviously of what's going on, that OCAP of all groups would be attacked in this way. But that's why OCAP's surviving, because it's stronger than that. So what this is an attempt to use a combination of brute force, trumped up charges, illegally restrictive bail conditions, prolonged trials designed to exhaust the hell out of all of you, to ban activism, to fire organizers from their jobs of working with poor people. OCAP is happening across the country. Jaggi Singh is facing, I think, 5 simultaneous trials, consecutive trials. Too many of the best organizers in this country are having their precious time and scarce resources used up trying to keep themselves out of jail. It's a strategy. It's a good one. That's why we need to spend as much time as we can so that they have time to spend it on what they want to actually spend it on, which is not keeping themselves out of jail, but continuing their organizing work. You know, Jaggi's crime, in quotes, he was, if you recall, in Quebec City. It's his Quebec City trial that's starting in January. It was possession of a deadly weapon, I believe. Possession of a weapon. I don't know if they thought it was deadly, but what it was a catapult that threw teddy bears, right? Which actually Jaggi didn't even have anything to do with. And the people who built the catapult were very mad and called him Braggy for trying to take credit. Well, it's true. But and in the OCAP trial, the prosecution has gone to similarly absurd lengths. Stefan was telling me, the chicken puppet? Step, why don't you read it now?
I was going to do this at the beginning, but then I was going to do it just before Peter to segue into the more legal-heavy aspect of tonight. But I'll do it now because it is interesting and relevant to what Naomi is saying. It's a painful thing to see lesser men, men of dubious intelligence and intentions, judging and prosecuting somebody like John. And I think what Brian said about the state's pathology and hatred for John is correct, and I think this excerpt will give you an example or give you a good illustration of that. The trial, I'm having trouble finding the page. The trial,
so many pages.
So many pages. This is actually only one volume of two volumes of the cross-examination of John Clark, so he gets a sense of what John has had to go through. And it was, the whole trial was in turn mind-numbingly boring and the most fastest-paced legal drama you could imagine. I used to be a fan of Law & Order, but I can't watch it anymore. So, this is probably a day or so of blistering so-called cross-examination of John Clark. And this is where Vince Puri, who is the Crown in the case and will be the Crown in the second trial, and who has been assigned to every OCAP charge, so whenever an OCAP member gets charged, wherever in the city they show up in bail court, who should be there? Vince Puri. This is an excerpt midday, and this is where Vince Puri is sort of winding up to his big punch. The thing that's going to do John in. Get this. Question. There's a little bit of a preamble, but I'll get to it. Question. Okay, Mr. Clark. I will put it to you that what actually happened, what the real plan was, that individuals would come forward, you knew the barrier wasn't locked down, and if there was any part of that you want me to repeat, let me know. You knew the barrier wouldn't be locked down, hence the flex cuffs, hence the clippers. You cut the barricades, and that was the plan all along. Everybody in the crowd was to know that the barricades were to be cut at that point because a puppet would be put behind it, and everyone would be able to spot where that was. I know you find it funny. We will get to that in a second. John Clark's answer, no, I'm sorry. Question, it's all right. And at that point where everyone knew where to charge and that's where they knew where to go through. You disagree with that? Agree. Answer, no, I disagree. It's a fascinating theory, but it's totally wrong. And then he takes out a videotape and plays it, and he goes through and orients John, and then he says this. Question. Okay. This is a character. This is Vince Puri. Question. Okay. This is a character we haven't really referred to much. This. Answer, yes. Do you agree with me that's Godfrey Francis' stuffed black chicken? Answer. Indeed it is, sir. Question. And one would agree that's a puppet. Answer, that's a puppet. Question, that's a puppet. And if you could turn, please, to page 5 in the action plan. Answer, yes, I have. You have that? Yes. And you see where it says plan. Answer, yes, indeed. And it says the puppet. Yes. Right. You testified that you didn't think that occurred because you don't like street theater, and you were talking about those big, yeah, large wooden effigies that you see at other demonstrations. That's correct. Would it be that you were referring to Mr. Francis' stuffed black chicken? Answer, no, I wasn't aware that Mr. Francis was going to bring a chicken puppet with him. And I think duly humbled, he moved on to other things, and in the course of his stumbling, he actually disclose the name of a young offender in the open court. So, I don't know. I think it speaks for itself. You can keep it.
Well, I think so too. We have. We have chicken puppets starting riots in Toronto and teddy bears storming barricades in Quebec City, which would be funny. It is funny, but the stakes are high. The stakes here, at its base, is that OCAP, as Brian said, is dedicated to a very simple idea, which is making poverty visible. You know, there's this quote from Pierre Pettigrew, Minister of Trade, where he talks about the old industrial model, or he said, let me see if I can remember this, he says, in the old industrial model of capitalism, you had people who were oppressed, but they could organize. They were in factories. They were oppressed. And now you have people who are simply outside the system, that our current system is discarding ever more people. So the traditional ways of organizing them within the factories is not even an option. And this is where OCAP is coming in to make the invisible, discarded people of this economic system visible so that they cannot be ignored. Now, the state's response is not to look at what is being shown, not to look at the poverty, not to look at the violence, but to try to make OCAP disappear. This is the strategy. So attacking John Clark is not an attack on him. It's an attack, and it's not just an attack on activists and organizers. At its core, it's an attack on the poorest people in this province. An incredibly tenacious attempt to rob them of one of their most eloquent and courageous advocates. Because when people die on the streets and nobody gets mad and nobody makes a fuss, you can pretend it isn't happening. And that's the actual goal of what's going on here. That's what getting rid of OCAP means. The ultimate expression of the Tory mindset. Instead of facing the pain of poverty and getting mad about it, we get mad at the people who dare to get mad. We're furious at them. For a decade, the solution to poverty, homelessness, and police brutality has been to try to shut up the people who are screaming the loudest. And this has been a collaboration between the police, the courts, the media, and the politicians. The message to the poor people of this province is not only the straightforward Tory message of you don't have a right to a job, you don't have a right to housing, you don't have a right to food. It's you don't have a right to fight for your life. That's what's at stake here, the right to fight for your life. Now, not everybody is going to be on the front lines with OCAP. God knows I have missed my share of rallies. But what I think that we need to say very, very clearly is that everyone who dares to think of themselves as progressive or part of the left has a responsibility to, at the very least, defend OCAP's right to fight. If you're not fighting yourself, defend the right to fight. So we can make a post-Tory resolution for the new Ontario left, which is never to attack the people who are on the front lines of fighting poverty in this province, to defend OCAP when they're under attack. And I think that if we can do this, if we can defend the right to fight, we will eventually defeat not just the Tories at the polls, but defeat the Tories within. Thank you.
Looks like Peter has arrived before the movie, so he could give us a...